Our verse today is Proverbs 13:12. You can find it in your worship guide or in your Bible. Hope deferred makes the heart sick, but a desire fulfilled is a tree of life. This is the word of the Lord.
Well, good morning. This is definitely a day that the screen up here is going to be helpful, unless you won the state sword drill contest when you were a kid. If you remember, you can kind of go through the Bible a lot. We're going to be looking at a lot of verses in the book of Proverbs about the heart. So either pull your Bibles out and get ready. And for those of you, we got some new people here. We've been studying the book of Proverbs over the course of throughout this summer so far, looking at how Proverbs is all about living in reality. That's a framework to think about what this book is trying to give to you. It's almost like a collection of tweets. That's probably the way to think about it. If somebody went through a group of basically thinkers, compiled all that, and then put it down for you, and they had like thematic kind of breakdown, all to help you know how do you live in what's real. So the book of Proverbs is basically saying that one of the great problems is we are often creating a simulation of the world around us. We see what we want to see. We see what the world tells us, and it may not be what's real. And Proverbs is trying to get you into the reality of the world. You remember a few weeks ago, if you weren't here, we talked about how the heart, in particular, is a compass point that is meant to guide us towards reality. It's supposed to be kind of guiding us to true north. But the problem is magnetic north in the world is always shifting. There's always a magnet out there that's grabbing your heart and pulling it. This is what Alexa is listening for. What is it you want? And then it's going to tell you with a notification. It's going to show up on your screen. Your friends are going to be telling you, look at this cool new thing. And suddenly, woo, that sounds good. And your heart goes towards that. And suddenly, you may no longer be living in reality. Our heart is the compass. But the problem is magnetic north is shifting. This is complex. How are we supposed to live this way? This is why there's a whole book of the Bible to say you need wisdom. It's why we need wisdom. Today, we're going to see how much wisdom is offered in Proverbs about the topic of the heart. Tripp went after that last week about the tongue. Now we go to the heart. This would kind of be a cool way to frame the series. We're not going to do this, but almost look at the body parts of the book of Proverbs because I think there's actually a whole theme there. But you see the tongue, how essential it is. Now we're looking at the heart. The heart is often referred to as the spirit of the inner life of a person. When we're talking about the heart, this is one of those where, because we're stepping into poetry and old thinking about poetry, what we think heart, you might be a heart surgeon, you're thinking the physical object, or we might be heart, like follow your heart, Disney, yes, it's all that. Or is it like the heart, the very essence of what you want and long for, the heartbeat of life itself? That's the way Proverbs talks about it. And what Proverbs says to us is that you'll never be wise if you don't understand the heart. So we're going to look at the hearts, particularly at the centrality of the heart, the complexity of the heart, and finally, heart healing. Would you pray with me just for one more moment? God, the truth is, until we understand the heart, we will never be wise. And you've told us that our hearts are like they're stone. And unless you do a heart transplant and take out the heart of stone and put in a heart of flesh, we're lost. And so we come to you asking for that. Would you make us attentive to the living heart if we have one as Christians? And if there's anyone here today who still has a stony heart, would you give to them a new heart? May it feel like, as extreme as this is, almost like a heart attack, as somebody recognizes that there is a dead heart inside and a new heart gets placed within them, and you wake us up in Jesus' name. All right? So Proverbs is clear that you'll never be wise if you don't understand the centrality of the heart, the inner life, your inner life. A lot of modern thinking pays attention to this. But ultimately, they focus on the externals. Whether that's a magazine you're reading, an article, a psychology class, a TED talk, most of the time they're going to talk about, you know, you're going to see this, that it's about a happy family, your body being fit and healthy, money helping you and have money management issues, retirement, popularity, smiling friends. This is what you're going to see, that if you have all that externally, your heart finally will be alive and kind of feel good. But wisdom tells us that it's not true. It's not, happiness isn't found externally. It's actually inside. It's the inner life is what matters. Here's a verse that helps us with this. Proverbs 18:14. A man's spirit will endure sickness, but a crushed spirit who can bear? So if you insert heart there, a man's heart can endure even sickness. A healthy heart can endure sickness, but with a crushed spirit, wisdom explains that life is unbearable if your spirit is crushed. Spirit, then, or the heart, is the central pillar of life. It's what everything is resting on, the foundation of existence. And if that pillar is broken, no external prop can bear the weight of your life. It doesn't matter what you try to insert there externally. You get the great job. You get the great spouse. You get the perfect vacation. It will not be able to support if you have a broken heart. Do you know the heart is the one muscle in the body that cannot heal itself? I read this as I was kind of at the earliest stages. Right now, the Weens' grandchild is... grandchild. That little baby's heart is right now in this final stages of those cells multiplying. And after it's born, those cells do not multiply. They cannot heal themselves. It's called non-regenerative. That's the nature of the heart. That's physical, but it also is true spiritually. We got a friend who, she was in her 40s. She wasn't feeling great. She thought she might have the flu or pneumonia or something. Went to the doctor. The doctor kind of checks her heart. They go get an EKG, check her heart. He's like, your heart is functioning at 25% capacity. You have to go to the ER right now. You could die at any minute. She's rushed to the ER. They check on everything. They're like, this is terminal. Your only hope is a heart transplant. Thank God she was able to get a heart transplant. She's still alive, got two amazing kids, amazing husband. But that's where we are. The heart is non-regenerative. So if it gets sick, we are in big trouble. Now, maybe that's alarming, but also kind of freeing. Because you're like, all right, the diagnosis is clear. Don't have a sick heart. It's that simple. You know, don't let your heart get sick. Let's get to healing now. But the problem is it's not that easy. You see, every Amazon reading list or college professor you go to, psychology class, every TED talk is going to give you some answer, but most of the time they're going to be reductionistic. They make the heart one thing. It's physical. You go to a doctor, they're going to say, your issue is physical. Here, take this pill. Not all doctors, but that's what we tend to do in modern culture. Or it's emotional. Got to go to a counselor, talk out your daddy issues. You'll be good. Any other such theories, but wisdom is this voice in the Proverbs that's actually showing you just how complex the heart is. First, wisdom explains that there is a physical dimension to the heart. Proverbs 14:30. A tranquil heart gives life to the flesh, but envy rots the bones. Okay, with each of these, again, you're talking almost poetry or tweets. You're going to have to read into what's trying to be said. But this is saying that envy, this word envy, the actual translation is hotness. It's passion. It's this, in essence, it's a negative energy, negative emotion, a heat that arises in your heart. And when it's there, it can rot the bones. That what's happening inside of your heart and all of that negative energy that gets inside of you, it will work itself out physically. Implication is that there's things that are happening in your physical body that you think is, I mean, this could be like literally like a skin rash. I don't know if this is medically true, but I can imagine. Certainly, Proverbs is suggesting it's a rottenness in the bones, that when your heart isn't working right, it actually can physically manifest in all these other parts of your body. There is a physical reality to the heart. It's not just that, though. It's also an emotional dimension. Proverbs 15:13. A glad heart. So you already get emotion, gladness, a happiness. A glad heart makes a cheerful face. But by sorrow of heart, the spirit is crushed. So the emotions of happiness or sadness radically affect the whole condition of one's life. Throughout the Bible, the face is regularly the symbol and the image that represents the whole person. So when God turns his face upon you, it's one of the benedictions that you'll receive. What we're saying is, God, will you turn your whole affection, every part of you, towards us? And here, when there's happiness inside the heart, a gladness, then the whole cheerfulness manifests in the whole life. But when there's sorrow in heart, it's a catalyst to the great destabilizing danger of a crushed spirit. So sadness can lead to that crushing, that sickness at the heart level. Okay, it's not just emotional though. Proverbs 12:25, anxiety in a man's heart weighs him down, but a good word makes him glad. I want you to see that there is a relational dimension at the heart level. Literally, an anxious heart can sink a man. But one good or kind or loving word can raise the sinking ship. That's the metaphor that Proverbs gives to you. There is an irrefutable law of the inner life that you need an outside word of love. You might think you can kind of be that man on the island, that woman who just needs no one, climbing the mountaintop and I'm alone. But that is not what Proverbs is saying. That inevitably, that hotness in your heart can lead to a sickness unless you have an outside word, a relational person to keep you afloat. And if you don't see the relational side of the heart, you could sink. There's more though. It's not just physical, not just emotional, not just relational. There's also a moral dimension to the heart. Proverbs 10:20. The tongue of the righteous is choice silver. The heart of the wicked is of little worth. Here you got to kind of step into the way that this writer is thinking about this truth. The tongue of the righteous is choice silver, meaning that when there is righteousness in the heart, the result is the tongue speaks this precious metal. But when the heart is wicked, when there is a wickedness inside the heart, it's basically worthless. It shows that our moral choices have a dramatic effect upon the condition of our heart. Oftentimes, our world wants to separate that I can basically, like, I can externally do good things, even though inside my heart really wants all of these wicked things. But, you know, I'll just keep doing all this good stuff and maybe it'll add up. Better stuff will kind of outweigh the bad stuff inside of me. But that's not the way Proverbs said it. An immoral heart is real, and wisdom says that it's virtually worthless. That's what our New Testament reading was speaking about, where Jesus is trying to say, listen, it's not the external, the externals is not what is causing the problem. That's what Jake was praying through. It's not the externals. It's actually what's inside of you that produces all of those things that defile a person. There's a morality at the heart level. This leads directly to the existential heart reality. This one is, again, a stretch, and I think it's going to be important for some of you to recognize this, because I could think parents, I could think friends. There are some people who at the heart level are really dealing with this existential nature of the heart. And you can feel like you don't get it. And you probably don't. You don't understand why they feel so lonely, why they feel so lost, why as they're walking through life, they're like, I just cannot find a happiness in this world. Well, listen to what this proverb says. Even in laughter, the heart may ache, and the end of joy may be grief. I often don't do this, but this is not a great translation in the ESV. And usually it's kind of in Psalms and Proverbs. When you get into the poetry side, this is where there's probably the most often wrestling throughout the ages about what these verses mean, because you're talking about this ancient text, you know, 3,000 years old, and we're trying to translate that language into the modern, into our modern thinking. But this is where Tim Keller and many of other studies really helped me with this. He basically kind of looking at all these Jewish and Christian commentators about this very text. What he found is that all of them agree that this text is really not a relative statement, which is the way this reads it. Even in laughter, you may ache, Or the end of joy may be grief. That is relative. Maybe. You may not sure. That no. Actually, what this verse is saying is that even in laughter, the heart aches. And the end of joy is grief. There is an existential identity level at which your heart understands this. You may have been hiding from this, avoiding this for so long. I wish I had understood this as a teenager, because I was one of those kids who felt things deeply. And somewhere inside of me, I can feel it right now, is this ache that says no matter how much good a vacation is, now how much I love my kids, there still is grief buried inside of me. Some of our comedians are the saddest people on the planet because they actually tap into this. They are aware of what all our hearts are telling us, that below it all, in the end of it all, every joy is going to end in grief. Every rich, sweet celebration is going to end at a funeral. The first step is going to terminate in the last dance. For all of us, and your heart knows this. This is why thinking like retirement can just fix this. Maybe this existential ache is what's ailing some of you, might be ailing some of your kids. It's why you might feel so alone. Here's Proverbs 14:10. The heart knows its own bitterness and no stranger shares its joy. When we start talking about the existential aspect of the heart level, this is a verse that I think only when you've really tapped in, maybe experienced some suffering, can you begin to really understand. But if you have, you know this to be true. This fundamental truth that at the most basic, deepest identity level, your heart truly is oftentimes unknowable to you and certainly unknowable to everybody else out there. No friend, no parent, no spouse, no child, no Amazon Alexa playlist can possibly know the fullest, deepest part of you. This is what's going on in all of our hearts, whether you realize it or not. That's what Proverbs is saying to you. You may not have realized that that's what you're feeling, that that's what's going on. You may not have realized that that's what your kid's living through. But this is what your heart knows. It knows things that your brain doesn't. So we need wisdom to teach us. And this brings us to our key text for today, and possibly the most important thing to understand about the heart, which is the volitional dimension of the heart, meaning the choosing. The choosing, the way your heart is the chooser of your life, the chief wanter, craver, hoper, chooser of your existence. Kids, please listen to this. You will always do what your heart wants. You will always do what your heart wants. So, if your heart wants to obey its parents, obey your parents, you'll probably do that. But if what your heart wants is to just not get punished, then you'll obey your parents, but maybe not for the right reasons. Do you really want to just be rich and powerful? And then you're going to start making choices that's going to do that. The heart is the chief wanter of your existence. Proverbs 13:12 says this, and this is kind of our crux of the text, crux of the sermon. Hope deferred makes the heart sick, but a desire fulfilled is a tree of life. The heart is the seat of your core commitments, your fundamental hopes. It's where all of life is stored. It's the sacred place inside of you where all your deepest desires, fundamental trusts, loves, dependencies are found. Wisdom, Proverbs, the Bible is saying to you, it is not about externals. And that's not just about money, retirement, friends, and popularity. That's also about your own like righteous activities. It's not about how many times you had a quiet time. It's not about how many retreats you went to, how many times you come to church. It's not about that until the heart changes. All of that activity you can do for all the wrong reasons and never know God. Jesus says it. I never even knew you. They're like, what? I cast out demons in your name. And he's like, I never knew you. He's talking about your heart. I never knew you because you never actually loved me. If these longings are deferred, if you continue to let your heart go after things that will never satisfy you, there will be a sickness, go all the way back to the crushed spirit, go all the way back to the heart cannot get regenerated, that will take over your life. But But I'm getting to the gospel, everybody. But when these fundamental desires are fulfilled, it's the tree of life. You see, there is a hopelessness to, like, I'm floating in the dark and I didn't even know I'm totally alone. Good night, Andrew. What a sermon. But then there is this joy on the other side. But when your heart is satisfied, it's like nuclear fusion inside of you. Nothing can rock you. Nothing can take you down, no matter what amount of outside external thing, because your heart is just fully satisfied. Tree of life. You get it? Tree of life. Friends, many of us have a dashboard of some kind for the heart. Maybe it's physical, emotional. We kind of keep track of that. Man, I've been struggling emotionally. I don't know what's going on. I'm feeling a little anxious. Many of us, maybe we actually are dealing with the existential. You're actually there looking at the identity level. Gosh, I just, no matter what I read the news, I'm just aware of just how much lostness there is in the world. Maybe you're aware of the volitional side, but few of us are able to comprehend all of these elements and keep track of that so we can have a healthy heart. And then you get to this verse that another prophet, basically Jeremiah, another one who comes speaking about wisdom, says to us, the heart is deceitful above all things, desperately sick. Who can understand it? So even if you did have gauges to read all that, then you're left with Jeremiah telling you, and guess what? You might think you understand your physical dimension or the emotional dimension or the volitional dimension of your heart, but guess what? You're deceived. We need God to heal our hearts. This is where we come back to the tree of life. Now, sometimes to understand a Proverbs, you need to read it in Yoda speak. Okay? You guys familiar with Yoda? Hope deferred sickens the heart. But tree of life, a dire desire fulfilled. Pretty good, right? Hope deferred sickens the heart. But tree of life, desire fulfilled. This is the way this proverb should be read. That what we need is tree of life. If we are going to have a heart that can sustain the life we're living in, we need a tree of life inside of it. Now, tree of life starts out in the book of Genesis. If you're familiar with the Genesis, all of life begins in this garden, and there's tree of life there. It was the sign and source of the fullness of life. Basically, Adam and Eve and all their children, all their line was always going to have access, was intended to have access to tree of life. See, I personally don't believe, well, we can talk more about this, but I think Adam and Eve were going to have to perpetually eat from tree of life. That their actual physical bodies, their emotional life, that somehow sacramentally this tree was there for them to always be being nourished by God through tree of life. Eating from it satiated the deepest desires of the soul. It was sacramental, many theologians and pastors talk about, meaning it actually imparted the divine presence to the souls of those who ate from it. Tree of life is really the first picture of the Lord's Supper. Sometimes to understand Proverbs, and for the heart to be healed then, the tree of life is everything. The end of the Bible also talks about the tree of life. There in Revelation 22, we're told that tree of life in heaven. So here at the beginning, this is what we're destined for, what we're made for. This is what we're destined for in Revelation. It talks about how there's this river that's going to flow from the throne of God. And that river is going to flow down. On either side of the river is going to be tree of life. And its leaves will be for the healing of the nations. And its fruit will satisfy all peoples. 12 kinds of fruit will be there. Tree of life is what we're made to get from the garden, and it's what we're banned for because of sin, and it's what we're destined for in the future. It's the essential element that our heart is nourished upon. Now, here's what's so amazing. You want to know the only other place that definitively speaks about tree of life? It's the book of Proverbs. You think this would be all over the Bible. But if you go searching tree of life, you're going to find a Genesis at the beginning, find a Revelations, and you're going to have Proverbs regularly talking about it. 3:18 says this, wisdom is tree of life. For those who take hold of her, those who hold her fast will be blessed. This goes all the way back to the beginning when I started this series, was saying, wisdom is what you need more than anything else. That's what the Bible sets it out. More than gold, more than treasure, more than relationship. You need wisdom. And Proverbs is saying, it's tree of life. This is just what Yoda taught us in Proverbs 13. Tree of life is desire fulfilled. So Proverbs says that the healing of the heart can only come from the tree of life. And that tree of life will be wisdom itself, giving a satisfied desire, a satiated heart. But where do we get to this tree? How do we get this tree now? I'm no longer in the garden. I'm not yet in heaven. So what am I? I need tree of life. That's coming from wisdom. It's going to be, if I can take hold of her. Well, Proverbs speaks of the tree of life in one other time. Proverbs 11, verse 30. The fruit of the righteous is a tree of life, and whoever captures souls is wise. I don't know if you've ever heard this verse. I heard it a lot of times, but like about evangelism. And it seemed like a cool verse. You know, yeah, you know, fruit of righteous, tree of life, whoever captures souls is wise. Literally, at campus ministry, heard this, like, we're going to go out on the beach, we're going to share our faith, capture souls. That's the very nature of what wisdom is. It's not a bad inference from this verse, but that's not what this verse is talking about. Let's just change the syntax a little, and I think we get the right understanding of what this verse is saying. The righteous one bears fruit that is tree of life. The wise one rescues souls. Who is this righteous one? Who is this wise person? Have you ever noticed how all through the epistles, Jesus' followers referred to him as dying on a tree? But he doesn't die on a tree. He dies on a cross. I'll be like saying, like Larry, when he builds houses with trees. It's like, well, he kind of does, but he builds them with like 2x4s and 2x12s. And like, what? It's not really a tree. I mean, it was a tree. So why do they use this language that he dies on a tree? I believe for one reason is because they saw Jesus on the cross as the tree of life. The righteous one bears fruit that's tree of life. Who else is that except Jesus? The wise one rescues souls. Who else is that wise one but Jesus? Are you seeing it yet? God promised us all that if we were perfectly righteous, if we would live in perfect fellowship, trust, obedience, love, even as he perfectly loved us and blessed us, then we would have dwelt in this garden, eaten from tree of life all of our days. But who amongst us is righteous enough to eat and bear that fruit, to be able to dwell there in tree of life day by day? It's a beautiful death sentence. Because none of us can. None of us is that righteous one who can bear this fruit. But Jesus is. He took this promise and he fulfilled it when we couldn't. God said, bear the fruit of righteousness. And Jesus said, I have. A perfect life lived. Father said, if you do, I promise it will be tree of life for all those who come to you. Everyone who takes a hold of you, this will be tree of life for them. And Jesus said, let it be. And then the Father said, you must eat and drink of this tree. The cross. You must die so that all the unrighteous who come to you might eat of that fruit and actually live. And Jesus said, not my will, but your will be done. And then from the cross, Jesus says, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they are doing. And the Father forgives. And so this is the end of all our desires. This is tree of life. Christ on the cross for each one of us, bearing the fruit of righteousness that we'll never be able to bear on our own, that we can partake of. 12 kinds of fruit, leaves for healing. Where else? Who else is that except Jesus? This is the tree of life that heals the heart, nourishes your soul, satisfies the inner person of who you are. Brothers and sisters, we have to take this gospel down inside of us. If you have never understood this or placed your faith in Jesus, this is the only want that your heart wants. The Proverbs is saying, Psalms is saying it, your heart craves the living God. We sang this, and you might think I need to sing it like kind of, I want to want this. Or you can read it as this is just the Bible telling you about your heart. You may have thought all these other things could satisfy you, but deep down inside your heart is saying to you, the only thing that I want is the living God. And you're chasing around trying to plug these things in. Maybe this will work. Maybe this will work. This will work. It doesn't work. How come none of this stuff works? I'm still lonely and empty and my heart is, none of this can sustain the pressure of my life. It's because your heart's saying, none of that works. You are made for the living God, and he's made himself available to you in the person of Jesus. And for all the rest of us, that is what will satisfy your soul. No matter what's happening physically, no matter what externally is happening, no matter what's happening emotionally, no matter the days that you might wake up and feel like, I am so alone. My spouse doesn't get me. My kids don't get me. My parents don't get me. My boss doesn't get me. I am so desperately alone. And you find out that there is a tree of life. There's a righteous one who has captured you, who totally gets you. When you begin to understand that Christ would have gone to that cross if you were the only person alive on the planet who needed him to, that's when you start to realize just how satisfied your soul can be in him. Jesus bore the fruit. He's ready to put that tree of life deep into the soul of your heart. And so would you just remember what that proverb says? Wisdom is a tree of life for those who will take her, who will hold her fast. This is the invitation of Christianity. It's not to do a bunch of externals. It's just to basically go to the cross, fall on your knees, and grab a hold of it. He's captured you. He's already got you. He's already grabbed a hold of you. It's just you responding with that response of, I'm going to hold on to you now. You've already got me. I didn't even realize it. I didn't know I was chasing all these other things and you were the one I always wanted. And then you turn, you see, it's not even on me holding him. He's already got me. But I'm never letting go, Lord. I'm never letting go. That is when your heart can be healed. Would you pray with me now? Oh God, we come to you hearing again this incredible truth that from the beginning, what we're made for to the end of where we're going is all fulfilled in the person of Christ. That you gave us Jesus and in giving us him, we have everything our heart longs for. God, if there's anybody here today who needs to profess that and turn to you, would you plant yourself down inside their heart even now? Would they feel the awakening of a new living heart inside of them and be one forever, their heart satisfied now and forever in you? And for the rest of us, God, as we acknowledged at the beginning, as we continue to recognize, we still so often will be pulled to so many lesser loves. Would you lift our eyes? That we might see just how good you are, how satisfying, how worthy, how all of our heart's affections can only be sustained and satisfied in you. And may we live holding on to all of your goodness in the gospel. In Jesus' name, amen.